the Index Packet Forensic Files with your host, Michael Morris. This episode's very special guest is Jake Williams, faculty at IONS Research, security consultant, former SANS instructor and course author, and best known as Malware Jake. Jake, welcome. Thank you for joining us. Tell us a little bit about yourself and your background.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Really appreciate it. I guess my background, I spent 18 years in the Intel community doing various fun stuff. I left that world in 2013. I thought I'd left it for good. The Russians out of me by name. That was not awesome in 2017. Since leaving that world, I founded and exited two cybersecurity consultancies, or exited slash divested myself out of two cybersecurity consultancies. Do a lot of private consulting work today. I'm doing a lot of fun work in generative AI right now. I've got my exposure to that, the Defense Intelligence Agency and the Institute for Defense Analysis back in the early 2000s. And I don't know, I mean, just all over the board, man. But I love talking packets and I love doing network. So this is a great fit.
Well, we love having you on, and I've known you for a couple of years now as we've worked together on a number of SANS webinars. And Jake, one of the things I really wanted to focus on in this conversation is, let's talk about Zero Trust. As a former CTO's perspective and now, Director of Cyber Threat Intelligence, what does it really mean for an organization, both technically and practically?
Yeah, this is a really hard thing. Zero Trust, I'm going to rant for just a second here on the vendor side, right? So many vendors, when Zero Trust became a buzzword, and particularly with the executive order, right? When it like buzzword outer space, right? From the to the moon, right? So many vendors jumped on there. Like, we're your Zero Trust this and Zero Trust that. And you go talk to some of these folks and tell me what you mean by that. All right. Well, Zero Trust. And I'm like, I know what I mean by Zero Trust. What do you mean? And so it's really difficult often to get to ground on, practically what value is Zero Trust. Everybody agrees it's great for security, but what value does it bring in, and what even is it? I like to think about it as really a mindset, right? A mindset or a philosophy, a design philosophy. And I think about it as, just at its very base level, deny all, permit by exception. That's an easy one on the networking side. How do we apply that elsewhere? It's
right.
You have to understand, right, what normal looks like, and only allow those things, right? Our networks aren't built that way. Our systems aren't built that way. And so, a lot of the buzzword tooling, whatever that we hear, as we start thinking from a technical standpoint, it's there to try to honestly solve technical debt, right?
Yeah.
We don't know what's supposed to talk to what, how it's supposed to work.
Right.
Overprivileged applications. Anyway, man, I could talk Zero Trust all day and the faux pas around it. But yes.
No, I think you're spot on. And I like to keep it simple when I think about it is, whatever's on the network, never trust it, always have to verify it. So then the question is, how do you get to that? So with that, do you think organizations are really ready to embrace all that it entails, right? I mean, you laid out a lot in your description, right?
Yeah, I think no. By and large, no. Okay. Maybe we would just back up and start from, like, I know you've worked in consulted with different organizations, whether it's, universities, big, wide open, share everything, healthcare, right? Availability rules, right? So never want to possibly break access, right, to something. But that flies in the face of Zero Trust. And so we really have to, have to understand that change management's another big thing, right, where a lot of folks are like fast and loose to change management. You can't do that at all anymore with Zero Trust. I was chatting with somebody last week. It's funny you mentioned this. Are organizations ready to embrace Zero Trust? And we were talking about Cisco ACI. Application-centric infrastructure, which is an implementation of some Zero Trust principles, or can be.
Yep.
And I'm like, hey, what value are you getting out of this? They're like, it's horrible. It's super complex, and every change takes all this time now. And I'm like, brother, that's Zero Trust, right? Every change you have to explicitly, if nothing is explicitly permitted, if there's no implicit trust, right, then every change is going to be that way. oh, I hadn't thought about that. It's like, then we aren't ready to embrace zero trust.
Right. No, that's a great example. And as you've been with many different vertical industries as well, right? There's lots of different levels of staging that go on in some industries that just don't happen in others. And I think you nailed it there with your summary. So where do you see some of the biggest gaps for security teams to truly start implementing and embracing zero trust?
I mean, the biggest gap has to be visibility. I mean, if we really step back, maybe visibility and knowledge, right? Mm-hmm. And if I want to really back up, then there's this legacy system problem, right? Where maybe our legacy systems rely on implicit trust. And, I think those are our biggest gaps, though. And, even when we say zero trust, and if I were doing like word association, like next word prediction, networking is the thing that comes right after it, right? Consistently. Mm-hmm. And teams just don't have that understanding. Even your application owners and your SMEs within your systems engineering teams, you go and you ask them like, well, where are all the things that this is supposed to talk to, right? Give me the, IPs, port protocol. And they're like, And they can name a couple, right? And then you're like, is that all? And they're like, probably. I'm like, probably doesn't work for zero trust, right? It doesn't, because the second that coming back to my ACI example, the second that I just say, okay, cool, that's it, right? And then we enforce a contract, I'm breaking the app. And so I think that friction is really where most security teams have those challenges. But, again, you solve this with visibility and also the recognition that even with the visibility, you're not going to do this overnight.
Yeah. You mentioned it earlier too. It's a process and a mindset. It's not a flip of a switch of one tool versus another and things like that. So it's something they really got to embrace. One thing we keep hearing, I mentioned it earlier, we talk about never trust, always verify as kind of this presiding mantra for zero trust conceptually. But how can you share some examples of where you see organizations just really not able to verify, right? It's just not there.
Oh yeah, totally. I think about even just troubleshooting some operations issues that maybe a security issue, maybe it's not, we're not really sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, heck, I don't know when we're going to release this, but Meta had that huge, hate to date us here, Meta had that huge outage yesterday, right? Yeah. Across, Instagram and Meta itself. And I mean, yikes, right? Was this a security issue? No, it's probably an operations issue. 9 times out of 10 it is, right? But it's going to be investigated as a security issue as well. Consistently network data rules there. And I don't mean simple NetFlow, mm-hmm. although that's a great start, right? But at the end of the day, it's PCAP or it didn't happen, right? I mean, you go to the security conferences and you see folks wearing PCAP or it didn't happen. Like, I've never seen the EDR or no malware shirt, right? Or EDR didn't happen. No, there's a reason we talk about packet capture.
Right.
Just the reality of it is that there's so many times that ends up being the thing where we look and we're like, because take my NetFlow example or maybe an HTTP log example, right? We intentionally, for lots of really good reasons, don't log post variables, right? Mm-hmm. Well, great. So I see in NetFlow that AP or there is a connection over, port 80 or port 443, right. Whatever, for strip encryption of the load balancer, right? And so I'm able to go and see the actual packets now.
Right.
And I can inspect and see, okay, sure, that connection was made. Yes, there was a 200 response code that came back, but did I actually submit the right data in the post vars? And then what did the response look like? In the vast majority of cases, my apps are not written with a sufficient level of logging for me to get there. And packet capture ends up being it, right?
Right. That's a great example. And I know you've done a lot of assists with different organizations in investigation, incident response. Can you share some other examples of where you helped organizations find the root cause or issues with packet data that they frankly weren't able to track down, which is log information?
Oh, yeah. Another fantastic one comes back to DNS, right? I hate to be like the it's always DNS guy, right? DNS, another huge one there where and I have to be generic, obviously, a little bit here because it's stuff, but started out with what they thought was a security issue and a denial of service issue ends up being a DNS issue. For lots of reasons, in a lot of places, we don't have DNS logging, right? And you know, there's all kinds of reasons for it. I mean, to the extent that we do, oftentimes we have it for the queries, but not the responses, right? So we're not actually logging the again, I got packet capture, game on. I'm reading the PCAP, right? I can actually go and see that DNS response. In fact, I remember with the probe, right? The NDACE probe, I've got that directly like in Wireshark, like I can just fire up on the probe, right? And be like, okay, now let me parse through this list of DNS response, you know, DNS packet responses here. And so that's a huge enabler. So that's another time that I've had that. I guess maybe one other really good, really good case study involved a financial services org. And they were on a VDI setup. The threat actors through some account takeover were ultimately able to, get a bunch of data. Now, because of VDI they got a bunch of data and then used FileZilla to FTP that data out. I had very little of this in the VDI settings. The only way I knew they'd used FileZilla is because, that creates some registry entries and created a couple of entries in the user's profile. Right?
Okay.
The roaming profile was getting written back, but I don't have the VDIs are getting blown away. And
right.
So I can't tell what data they stage, and we didn't have logs. Like I could tell they touched this system and this system and this system touched, but what, right? And so we're missing a lot of endpoint log data. But at the end of the day, what we really, really cared about was that data that went out, right? As soon as we knew that there had been data exfil and we confirmed that, what was it, right? And so in this case, I got lucky. We did actually have packet capture. It was FTP, right? And I mean, why wasn't it SFTP? I don't know. I'm not here to critique the threat actors. Even there, though, I do want to highlight, even if it had been SFTP, I may not be able to tell you what it is, but I can tell you what it isn't, right? Just based on size, right?
Yeah.
And now I've got the data to be able to say that, right? But yeah, I mean, here we're able to go back and turn what could have otherwise been a very large reportable event into a, they were after intellectual property, not customer records.
Right.
And so huge change there, right? Now, obviously, still a bad day regardless, right? But a much better bad day than we were originally thinking. So.
Right. Those are some great examples. I always love talking with you because you've done this so many times. You've got many war stories of things you've experienced. So when you're called into a threat investigation and an incident, what are some things you look for and start with to get your arms around the situation?
I mean, first off, it's understand architecture, right? What does the network architecture look like? Because, several reasons, right? It's pretty public at this point, at least thanks to the Russians, right? I used to be a threat actor myself. And so I'm looking at it from a, if I were here, where would I go next, right? How would I, and normally then I'm following the threat actor that way, because usually we're making the same types of assessments, same types of decisions. But I also need to know what telemetry I have to go investigate that, right? Because that's, what I'm talking about first is my black hat. Now I need to turn right back around and think about, now, how am I going to investigate that, right?
Right.
Oftentimes folks will say, oh, Jake, we have NetFlow or we have packet capture. Okay, cool. I still don't know what that means, right? Because without me looking at your, and I know you know this all too well, without me looking at your network architecture and understanding what your collection points are, right? I don't necessarily know what I should be expecting to see in the packet capture, because one of the things that I have to get my arm around, and I don't think we talk about this enough in network investigations and response, is when I query for some data and I receive that data back, right?
Mm-hmm. Or
you can even say I'm threat hunting. Now granted, this isn't threat hunting. You're talking about an instant response here, but I'm querying data to solve a hypothesis. I have a hypothesis, but when I get the data back, okay, cool. But when I don't get any data back, this is where we really need to start the analysis, because I have to then step back and ask, did I not get the data back because it didn't happen or because we didn't see it, right? And this requires, unfortunately, knowing how networks work and not, you know, again, this is the old network engineering piece. How does routing actually work? Most InfoSec professionals, legitimately and for good reason, we're busy and we have lots of skills we need to develop. They don't have CCNP kind of background.
Mm-hmm.
Don't actually understand that. And so often we'll see folks make a faux pas along this line too, where they're like, oh, okay, well, it's not in the system. And so we can therefore say the threat actor's in. I'm like, well, hold the phone. Let's stop there, right? Does it mean it didn't happen? Or does it mean because of our visibility position, we didn't see it yet?
Right.
And getting to ground on that when you're coming into an environment is very, very difficult because, you know, again, you're trying to learn the environment and learn the intrusion at the same time or investigate the intrusion at the same time. And so, yeah.
No, that's an excellent point on the whole concept on the architecture starting there, right? Especially when you look at many organizations, again, coming back to Zero Trust, various walled gardens to try and mitigate who has access to what and things like that. And if you don't understand that build out and those layers, it's not going to make sense, right? And as you know, one of our value propositions is to get to the packet data of relevance to an incident, right? Quickly, because looking at packet data, as you said, is very hard if you don't know what you're looking for, right? And if you don't know who should be talking to who. So you nailed it on the architecture. So you brought up an interesting point when you were kind of close to your answer.
We can pivot right back to that.
Yeah.
Another thing that bites us all the time, right, is NAT gateways, right? So, you know, you talk about a walled garden. Oftentimes, you know, I have that implemented, and it may be a walled garden where it's a remote office or the R&D lab or whatever, and it's connected through, at least from my visibility, right, everything coming out of that is one IP address. It's a NAT gateway. One of the things that I love about NDACE, by the way, is the ability to go drop another probe back behind that, right? And then in a unified, you know, from one search interface, right? I can go and see the packets here. I can see the packet, you know, behind, you know, the NAT gateway. I can see them, you know, back in a remote office, what have you. And again, I'm not trying to go through five or six different panes of glass. It's one pane of glass.
Right.
And I love that ability to do that. But step one, of course, is knowing, right, where those visibility gaps exist and then deploying around those to close them. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there.
No, you're spot on. Where I was going was you were mentioning in your last answer about, you know, some of the skills, right, and some of the training required and CCNA and things like that. SOC team skill gaps are a prominent topic or theme in the industry, right? You and I have heard it a bunch. Massive shortages of highly skilled cyber specialists and you as an educator for years and a renowned SANS instructor who's been working to help develop these competencies, what are some recommendations you have for both every analyst and every CISO or SOC director to really elevate their team and themselves and the organization across the board?
Man, I think this is going to vary a lot depending on whether you're like a SOC analyst versus a director or what have you. But, you know, I would say for my, you know, my technical analysts, learn networking, right? I mentioned the CCNA piece. I don't even remember when my CCNA expired or my CCMP expired or whatever, but like, okay, fine. It's measured in decades. I want to be super clear here, right? So this is in the way back side, right? But that's, I mean, you know, that's really foundational and it has helped me a lot. You know, the folks that like every SOC analyst has, you know, opened Wireshark, right? But you remember like some of the webcasts we did with SANS, right? We started out and was like, you know, like, hey, let's dive into Wireshark. And I'm showing like baby Wireshark, you know, filter skills. I know you remember some of those, or it's like, you know, IP.adder or frame contains, right? And folks are like, oh, you know, looking for the SYNAC as a successful connection. TCP offset 13 equals 0x12, right? And little stuff, right? That is not expert level stuff, right? But folks are like, whatever. Go learn that because it's going to change the game, like for you, because consistently we come back to network, right? Consistently come back to the network. And it just makes everything easier. Really understand how networking works. If you're up at a director level, I'm gonna flip the script a little bit. and I'm gonna say business, right? You know, read some business books so you speak the same language as your non-security stakeholders, and use those common things, those common books that you've read from the MBA reading lists at your local university or whatever, to help educate them on security using terms that they already understand.
Right. No, that's a great point too, because I mean, we hear this probably from our own HR or security departments a number of times. Security is everyone's responsibility, but as a senior leadership team, they have to embrace what all that entails. And I think I think you really nailed that, to speak their language the other way around. So Jake, this has been a real pleasure talking to you. One of my questions I always like to ask our guests is I ask you to put on your prognosticator hat for a moment and say, if there's one or maybe two things you really think people should be on the lookout in the cybersecurity space over the next 6 to 12 months, what's something top of mind for you from a network and cybersecurity?
I mean, turns out it ties well together. It's networking and cybersecurity. you know, I'm really looking at the you know, the managed file transfer appliances, the you know, Citrix NetScalers, the you name it, right? The SSL VPN with Fortinet, the you know, Avantis, we have so many of these appliances, right? Network security, many of them are directly network security appliances or sort of a network security function, that have tremendous technical debt and lots and lots of unpatched, undiscovered, I guess, vulnerabilities. and so, I mean, undiscovered by whom, right? But you know, because we all know that sometimes those are weaponized and used in small volume and, you know, by nation states and whatever. But I think that's probably it for me, right? I don't know where the next O'Day is going to pop up, right? But this does, it's so interesting you ask me about this, because we're circling all the way back to where we began with zero trust. Because, you know, I don't know where the next go anywhere is going to start, right? Or I don't know what the next go anywhere or move it or whatever is going to be. If I did, I'd own my own private island in the Bahamas, right? And we'd be sipping some mojitos there. But what I can do, though, is knowing, like, I don't know where it's going to be, but I'm confident there is going to be one. And if I can then start looking at zero trust to, forgive the term, limit the blast radius, right? You know, to make sure that a threat actor can't pivot from my MOVEit instance into my network, right? Laterally move into my network. That's a huge win for me. And then visibility, right? Because I need to know if that's happening, right? Or if somebody's trying. And so visibility, you know, ties in very well there, because, you know, we're starting with these things are connected to the internet. They have to be connected to the internet, like directly exposed to the internet, right? There are definitely still vulnerabilities in them. I don't know where the next one's going to be. So the best thing that I can do at this point then is assume that they're going to be breached. Limit that blast radius and then deploy visibility.
No, that's a great point. That's something you hit it there at the end about how everything is connected to the internet. It's my opinion that, and I'm always astonished of how much reconnaissance and lateral movement there is going on. I mean, you just got to assume there's threat actors in your network. You just got to figure out what are they doing and are you protecting the crown jewels, right? So I think you nailed it there too. So Jake, well, thank you for taking time out of your busy day and schedule to share your insights with our listeners in how to better secure networks. We'd ask our listeners to tune in next time for another edition of the Endace Packet Forensic Files. For more information about Endace's network packet capture platform and your integrations with our Fusion technology partners, please go to endace.com. Jake, thank you so much. We really appreciate your time. Have a great one.
Thanks. You too, man. Appreciate it.